Hello and welcome to Small But Mighty, the podcast from Radlett Prep School, where we explore the big conversations shaping prep education today. I'm Laura Flynn and I'm joined by Sophie Lamarchand.
Hi Laura, hello everyone, it's great to have you with us. Today we're kicking off our very first episode by asking a genuinely important question. Why does independence matter in the world of prep schools? And what does it actually mean for children?
Because parents hear the term independent school constantly, in prospectuses, websites, conversations at the school gate, but often the practical impact on day-to-day learning isn't always clear.
Exactly. So today we're going to unpack what independence really looks like in a school like ours, how it affects curriculum, class sizes, relationships, opportunities, and the whole feel of childhood here.
Independent in education really comes down to two things, freedom and responsibility. We are free from the national curriculum, which means that we can design a programme of learning that genuinely fits the children in front of us. For example, here at Radlett, our curriculum is set at least a year ahead of the national curriculum, and we are able to further bespoke our offer with many of our children learning 2 to 3 years ahead of their peers, rather than bending our children to fit a system.
And that freedom comes with responsibility. We're accountable to our pupils, to our families, and to our directors. It means our decisions must always be purposeful. So when we choose a topic, introduce a new enrichment activity, or redesign the timetable, it's because we believe it will truly support our children's development. We've seen this with the introduction of Forest School and our creative curriculum, which have both helped to develop resilience, deepen understanding, and embed a love of learning.
Absolutely. And that independence also means agility. If something isn't working, we can fix it quickly. If children need more time on something, we're able to give it. And if a new opportunity emerges, a partnership, a competition, a guest expert, for example, we don't need those layers of approval to make it happen.
And, crucially Laura, independence lets us stay true to a mission. For us at Radlett Prep, that's about cultivating scholarship, spirit and success. Not just academically, but socially, emotionally and creatively.
Sophie, I think it's really important to take a moment to talk a little bit about class sizes. Because at open days, school in action mornings for example, this is one of the things that families always talk about.
Absolutely, and the reality is small classes make the biggest difference when teachers use them well. Small classes aren't about having fewer chairs, they're about creating space for stronger relationships, for better dialogue and quick responsive feedback. The things that really transform learning, and we see here daily at Radlett.
In a smaller class of say 14, 15, 16 children, no child is able to get lost. Teachers can really spot those misconceptions in the moment, and they can stretch pupils who are ready to leap forward and support those who need more time without waiting for that formal assessment point.
And small classes are especially powerful in the prep school age group that we have here. These early years are where foundations of English, maths, curiosity and confidence are really built. Being able to give children targeted attention at this stage has profound long-term benefits.
Which means that here at Radlett Prep, Small But Mighty isn't just a slogan. It is the daily reality of the teaching that takes place. It means that every child here is seen, and it means that those relationships are genuine, and feedback is meaningful.
Of course, one of the greatest advantages of being an independent prep school is our freedom to shape the curriculum. We're not bound to a fixed programme, which means we can dive deeper, broaden topics, or just follow a spark of curiosity. Mm-hmm. When learning about the Romans, our children became soldiers and reenacted battle formations on the playground. Studying rivers in Year 5 leads them to explore water resistance in the natural pond that appears on our grounds each year. And during the Year 3 Stone Age topic, pupils created cave paintings under their desks by candlelight.
Oh, definitely. And this matters so much more than people realise. Because education isn't just knowledge, it's curiosity, confidence and character. And this independence really lets us build those rich experiences. Outdoor learning in the ancient woodland, investigative maths in year five, robotics and coding clubs, specialist sports provision, musical ensembles, drama productions, including our annual year six performance in the Radlett Centre each year. These are the kind of moments that children remember forever.
Absolutely. And when something in the world changes, whether it's a significant news event, a scientific breakthrough, or maybe a cultural moment, we can adapt our teaching immediately and meaningfully. Even a viral trend can make its mark on our curriculum. Who will forget when our maths teacher delivered a week of high-level maths investigations and homework based around 6-7?
Oh, and that agility really strengthens our pastoral care too. We can schedule time for circle time discussions, mindfulness lessons, and of course our bespoke values curriculum. This isn't extra. This is what independence in education allows us to do. So it is my pleasure to welcome our guest, Jo Cameron, to our podcast. Jo is head of Queenswood School, an all-girls senior school in Hertfordshire, passionate about independence and maintaining independence. And so it's really great to have you with us to talk about everything we want to discuss.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a real privilege to be here. So thank you, Laura and Sophie.
We're delighted to have you with us. We have spoken already quite a lot about how independence allows for curriculum agility and that kind of freedom to shape the children's learning in whichever direction their interests, their curiosities might take them. Is there something unique that you've been able to kind of do at Queenswood where not being tied to a kind of rigid national programme has allowed you that freedom to do something quite unique or quite exciting?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, being independent in its biggest sense, obviously, you know, all independent schools are independent from you know, the government in the sense that we're not state schools, but having that real independence means that, you know, as a head and as a leadership team, we can really model the curriculum and not just the academic subjects, but the work outside of that to what's right for the girls and children. I'm obviously at a girls' school, so I will refer to girls quite a lot. But obviously to the setting that you're in, and so making sure that you are able to be flexible and adaptable, not just within your school, but actually within the year group, and then within that range of ability that you have and the types of learners that you have within the classroom, within the year group, and of course within the school, means that you're getting it right for the individuals. And so yes, in the secondary setting, we, you know, it's important that we still continue with the GCSEs, and in our case we do A levels, so there is that rigidity that all schools must, you know, most schools, I think there are a few that are going quite sort of rogue on that and are designing completely their own curriculum. You've got to be very, very brave to do that. But actually making sure that your curriculum then reflects what your values are, and even simple things like the structure of your day, you know, making sure that the timings are working right for those children, you know, within the school. So examples that I've seen, and obviously you know, we've developed at Queenswood and in previous independent schools, are often around the cross-curricular work and the work between subjects, where teachers can really truly make sure that the content and the curriculum is transferable between subjects, and also making sure those connections are made. And you know, I think it's something that you do really well in prep and primary. Once we move up into secondary, sometimes those connections are lost because children tend to compartmentalize, and if they're only looking at, you know, one subject area, they can sometimes feel that is sort of, that's enclosed. And what we really want to do as educators is help children to understand that there are all these connections from lots of different parts of the curriculum. So being able to design a curriculum that encourages that, where staff can work together, where we're not just learning for a qualification, but we're learning because, you know, it's about developing that desire to learn new things and to make those connections.
Yeah. And I really liked what you talked about. You talked a little bit about values and those values that matter. And for me, as a head, when your teachers have that freedom and flexibility to really share with the children what our school values are, what their values are as a teacher, and their passions, that's when the learning really comes alive. Mm-hmm. You know, that ability to really fire that spark, rather than having sort of something imposed on them, you know, we've got to teach it and we've got to teach it this way, but actually this is what we believe in as a school, this is what we believe in as a community, and this is what I, as a teacher, as a trained educator, as a specialist in my area, can really instill in the children. I just think that is so powerful.
That has a huge impact as well upon the types of relationships that teachers and their classes can build, and being able to have that kind of flexibility, instill in the children our teachers' passions, our school values, and by having smaller class sizes as well. I think that all plays into developing the kind of strongest possible relationships between the children and the teachers, which, as we know, is absolutely pivotal in their education.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in the secondary setting, the key stage three curriculum is the area where we can really have the most flexibility, and, you know, allowing us to extend the children that, you know, in years 8 and 9 are really knocking on the door of GCSE. So being able to extend those children, bring them through, you know, really make sure that the value added in at that key stage is as high as it possibly can be, because we can make sure that they're accessing content and skills that are higher than maybe a more restricted key stage three curriculum, you know, would instill. And then equally, though, you know, where children are maybe finding some of the aspects of that time in their education challenging, be able to put in that scaffolding, that structure, but keeping the curriculum lively and enjoyable. And like you say, you know, having those passionate teachers that really believe in their subject and are able then to just go beyond the curriculum, or just go beyond that scheme of work, and just modify it so that they can show their passion. Because once you've got children engaged with the teacher and their real passion for the subject, then that's where, you know, you really start to fly and you start to see those sparks.
Yeah. And I'm sure you spend a lot of time talking about this at, you know, admissions events, open days, that sort of thing, but when parents ask the question, you know, you're an independent school, you're a standalone school, why, what do you say in terms of that answer? Why does that matter so much?
Well, yeah, I'm deeply passionate about it. It's because it really is so important on so many levels. So it's really important from a governance perspective. You know, in my mind, where you've got governors who are local in the sense that they are deeply passionate about your school, they are making decisions about your school, and they love your school, they you know, they want your school to be as successful as it possibly can be, and they are the people making those really big decisions, in obviously with support of the executive team. So if those people are there and they're really close to what's happening, that means the best possible decisions can be being made for your school. They're not remote, they're not thinking about other schools, they're not thinking about making surplus and money, and they're actually thinking about what's right for those children and for the whole community. So that's really the first level. Those big decision and strategic direction of the school is controlled by people who really do care about the school. And I don't think that's the case when you've got bigger groups, and you know, the groups of schools that mean that all of those schools then are under that one jurisdiction.
They have to look under that whole umbrella if they've got a whole group of schools, rather than looking what are the individual characteristics of this school, what is this school passionate about, what are the values of this school.
And then financially, of course, you know, any surplus that an independent school makes probably independent school is reinvested back into that school. It doesn't go back into a big pot which is then decided by a larger body where, you know, which other school might need that money being spent on it. So it's the decision making, it's the finances, it's the ability to be flexible and make sure that the core values, the heritage of that school are maintained. And that all then means that you have a community that really buys into the school and you've got that passion. And that means there's fight. That means there's, you know, there's rigour. There are people who care and who will go above and beyond for that community. And we must remember that schools are communities. Mm. Yeah, they're different to any other businesses. They are schools. Now, of course, in the independent sector, more than ever right now, we are having to look at our schools as businesses. Of course we are. And they have to work as a business. But educating children is not a business. Educating children are people's lives. Educating children are the most important. You know, children are the most important thing. So getting it right for them is not a business decision. It's something which is, you know, far beyond that, and you need people who truly care about that school and that environment to be making those decisions.
Mm. I love hearing you talk about that. You are so articulate and so passionate in how you express that importance. Taking it back down now, you know, with children at the heart, as you've just said, what would you say is, how does that translate on the ground for a child that is in front of you? You know, we see examples every day. I think we can pick out, you know, hundreds of examples every day of how we think it impacts on, you know, children in our school. But for you, how does that translate day to day for, you know, taking one child's journey?
Yeah, so children are individuals, and that's what it really comes down to. You know, quite often I'm asked, what is a Queenswood girl? And I say, oh, there is no such thing, thank goodness.
You know, we all to be the same.
Yes, we don't have a type of girl. We have lots of individual girls. And so the ability to make those personalised decisions for every child, that is something which is critical for their education. And that might mean the design of the co-curricular programme. You know, that might mean the demands, expectations of my staff, which are that, you know, every individual child has an educational journey that is personalised to them. It's the funding. It's making sure that the finances of the school are being funneled in the right direction, which is for the benefit of the girls. You know, I always say to my staff, if you're making a decision, if that decision is in the best interest of the girls, our students, then it's the right decision. If you're questioning that, or if that's not quite, you know, that it's not clear, then you need to think again. And so having that the ability to make sure all those decisions that are made, whether that's through the subjects that are offered, whether that's through the co-curricular, whether that's through the design of the school day, those decision points then mean that every child will have the journey that they, you know, personally need.
And I think if staff always come back to that in their decision-making process, they're not going to go far wrong,
are they?
You can't
go far wrong.
What is the most important thing for this child in this situation? And coming back to that is all that matters, really. Mm. Can I play devil's advocate a little bit?
It.
I think independence in this sense matters more at a prep school than a senior school.
Okay.
And I know we're obviously a prep setting here, yes. You are a senior setting. I think when the children are in their kind of formative years, that flexibility with curriculum, with smaller class sizes, in developing those relationships early on in a children's educational journey, I think both are important, but I think there is a greater impact in the prep years, and I'd just be interested to hear if you have any counter arguments perhaps to it.
Well, I think on the one hand you're right. I think that you've also got more flexibility within your curriculum because you are not restrained by the
GCSEs
public exams,
and A-levels,
which we are to some degree. So I have to agree with you on the one hand, if I'm honest, I'm quite saddened to see so many prep schools joining so many groups. Mm. I understand it's a survival, potentially there's a survival issue, but I think that being a standalone prep school and therefore being able to make the decisions that, you know, we've just talked about independently means that as the children grow, you know, all those things still apply. Whether it's more significant in the prep setting compared to the secondary setting, I would have to disagree. And that's because, in a way, because of the restrictions that we have in the secondary setting with GCSEs and A-levels, we need to be even more creative. We need to make sure that actually we are not being funneled in one direction, creating a type of child, that actually we have to be more creative in the things outside of those public exams to make sure that that personalised journey is truly there for our children. And, you know, ultimately for our parents, it's about choice. Yeah. And choice, you know, independent schools are there to give choice. They're to give choice to our parents so that they can, as best as they can, make the right decision for each of their children. And, you know, very often I have parents who have children at different schools, and they come and they say, and that's not just because it's a boy and a girl, because obviously I can only have the girls, they say, this school I know is right for this child, and this school I know is right for this child. And we want schools to be different, don't we?
Yeah, of course.
It's really important.
It is,
you know, when I talk to prep school heads, you know, like you, Laura, I say, I want to get to know you, I want to get to know them, because I want you to understand my school so that the right children, you send the right children to my school. And you need choice. You need a choice of 100%. Schools. Now, I think if lots of schools are coming under, if they all come under the same umbrella within a big group, or they start to lose their identity and it's chipped away, and they then all become a similar type of school. And, you know, I mean, for us, even contractually, being able to have our own contracts, you know, being able to have our own catering, you know, just making sure that We design the menus. We make sure that no one's making a huge profit from the food that we're giving our children. You know, we make sure our transport system suits our children, our school, our families. We're not beholden to a bigger organisation where they're trying to make, you know, money from contracts that go across lots and lots of schools. These are all things that parents are oblivious to until something just doesn't quite work, and those questions are then answered. So those things sort of outside of the sort of day-to-day running of the, you know, the curriculum and what you immediately think of as a school, those wider things actually become more and more important, or are maybe more important than some people realise.
Absolutely. It's been absolutely fascinating hearing your insights and your perspectives. So, drawing it to a close, what is one thing, one unique thing that you feel that independence has allowed you to do, either as a head or as an educator?
Oh, okay. So I think the biggest thing for me is being able to make those big strategic decisions for the direction of my school. And that is, for us, being able to, you know, be passionate about educating girls in a girls-only setting, and being able to make sure that the resources that we're investing in are right for the school. You know, probably a big thing for us at the minute is our investment with the Lawn Tennis Association. We've just invested sort of nearly £2 million in new courts, which mean we're going to be the only centre in the country to be able to host the big LTA tournaments, the European tournaments.
Yeah.
So, you know,
brilliant.
So being able to make that decision, working with some, you know, a great organisation like the LTA, I don't think I would have been able to make those sorts of decisions. And that all feeds into the bigger picture, of course, of getting it right for the girls.
Yeah, fantastic. Jo, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jo.
For being our very first guest on episode one of our podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, and I'll come back anytime.
Lovely. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you.
So, in today's episode, we've looked at what independence really means in a prep school setting. The freedom, the agility, the relationships, and the richness that it brings to children's days.
And ultimately, independence matters because it lets us stay focused on what children need, not what a system demands.
If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow Small But Mighty and share it with somebody who would enjoy this discussion.
Next time, we're diving into what a Small But Mighty classroom might actually look like in practice. How teachers design feedback, stretch, support and challenge in small classes.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.